You're listening to the Connecting Industry podcast, brought to you by Connecting Industry. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders at connectingindustry.com.au.
Welcome to the Connecting Industry podcast, brought to you by Connecting Industry. I'm Kieran Moran. The Connecting Industry podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resource and construction sector throughout Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource and construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connecting Industry podcast, we have William Robertson, the Business Development Manager for Steinert Australia. From traditional and trusted magnetic separation equipment right through to sensor sorting technologies, Steinert Australia have developed intelligent separation and sorting solutions for a range of industries throughout the mining, resource recovery, scrap, waste and recycling sectors. William is an experienced Chief Sales Officer with a demonstrated history in business development and relationship management across cultures and has helped shape the direction of the company through analysing markets and identifying avenues of growth. Welcome to the program, Will.
Thank you very much, Kieran, and thanks to Connect Industry for having me on today and to allow me to speak about Steinert Australia.
Yeah, it's a very interesting company, actually, and does quite a lot in a number of different sectors, and including waste as well, which we'll get onto in the future. I do like to start these podcasts with first people getting a little bit to know about you. And I actually want to go back a little bit further. So as I always say, we stalk people on LinkedIn and so forth. I'm just wanted to find out, where did you grow up? I've got a couple of listings here. We've got you've worked in Brazil and also South Africa. Where did everything begin for you?
It all began back in South Africa, born and raised in the Karoo in the Northern Cape, and you know, moved to the northeast coast of the country where I started my apprenticeship in industrial automation. First started in the pulp and paper industry. This is many moons ago.
In the pulp and paper industry, did you say?
That's correct, yes. Highly automated process, and it had a lot of fun, you know, learning, getting the basics, getting a foundation, a good foundation, and the old technology, which was a lot of pneumatics back in the day, which is then later on transitioned over to computerized smart transmitters and smart instrumentation, which we have today. So it was, yeah, a bit of a journey over the last 25 years.
Yeah, and I'm interested to know about that journey a little bit in relation to the, you know, automation and what you were involved with. How have you seen, tell us when you first started, what was it like then, and how have you seen that change the technology?
You know, it's developed a fair bit, especially in the smart sensor space, you know, and moving from the original instruments that were field-based instruments providing one to two variables and then switching over to plant communications, you know, when they could give more than one variable output, not just, for example, temperature, it would could tell you the alarms, the process alarms. So the instruments themselves got a bit smarter over time. And we started reducing the cabling by installing communications. And nowadays, the instruments can give you a host of information and all connecting into IoT, and they can all connect to the cloud. So it's really advanced a lot in the space of how we use the data that comes from the primary sensors, as well as our deconvolution, so to speak, of the data and making it useful in order to improve the process and the product at the end of the day.
What was your interest? So how old were you when you got into this sort of industry, and what was your interest to be able to do that?
Well, I left school when I was 17, went to college, did my higher, my matriculation basically in college. So I started my apprenticeship a little bit early, 2 years ahead of my peers, because I was interested in technology at the time and I really wanted to get into it. Left school early and got stuck in.
And how'd you end up in Australia in the end? How long have you been here for?
I've been here for going on 14 years now. Okay. Living in South Africa, working over there, had an opportunity from a South African firm to do a joint venture in South America, Brazil, as you know. I implanted the product range into the local market and doing a lot of business with mining, Vale and the big companies over there. After that contract was completed, I returned to South Africa, and you know, the international bug bit me, and I wanted to see the rest of the world, you know, and how people live and how they do things. And the next opportunity that came up was Australia, of course, and I grabbed it with both hands.
And being able to do that, so go and look, you know, different cultures, of course, different people, and, you know, Australia and England are a different culture to that point and the way they live and the way they do things. What were some of the biggest difficulties or the greatest wins, I suppose, in relation to some of the changes that you did see moving to different cultures and living in them?
Well, yes, it was a crash course in cross-cultural anthropology, I can tell you that much. I did move to Brazil. Was a complete culture shock. You know, the food, the language, everything was different. People can speak English, but you know, in engineering terms, when you go walk into someone's office, they expect you to speak their language. You're in their country, wanting to do business with them. And I very quickly had to learn Portuguese and translate our manuals and our training materials into Portuguese. I had someone who helped me with that. I took a few lessons, but the bulk of my learning was really at work in the office. My boss said to the rest of the team, don't speak a word of English to him, speak Portuguese. And, you know, that really helped me. Within 6 months, I could read and understand. And by 12 months, I could speak fluently. I was doing presentations by the end of that. 2 years later, I walked away knowing another language, you know, which was great. So that's probably my biggest win from that, learning their culture, learning how to integrate and really change a product, you know, from a professional's perspective, change a product branding into a new environment, into a new market where you come and you're new, you've got no name and local footprint, and then building that up over a 2 year period, you know. So walking away there, we had great sales, some very large projects that we ended up selling within the 2 years. And, you know, me walking away with a really good professional understanding of Brazil and South America as a whole, and then learning the language, of course, that was a great one.
You you mentioned there engineering with, you know, I suppose you have to go through a lot of specs and so forth on the engineering side. And I have said this before on the podcast, you know, part of the game that I'm in, of course, is communications. And one of the worst communicators are engineers. We're even having a discussion last night with an engineer. He was an electrical engineer. He was having a go at the civil engineers. And he was sort of saying, you know, in relation, they would write down for a client everything that's going on. And it was like he had to transcribe it for them to understand it. So it would have been very difficult to, you know, a different language and so forth like that, but to also to describe, you know, the techniques and the processes and also the design that you were putting in.
It doesn't come without its challenges. I remember giving a presentation and I used a word that meant a great quantity, but it was the wrong word. The Brazilians use the word when they smack their kids. Okay. So it has a double meaning. So the whole room burst out laughing. They got what I meant to say and understand. So that really accelerates your learning. You try not to embarrass yourself too much when you're on stage and giving talks and presentations. You know, so I think that level of pressure and stress pushes up to, you know, enables you to learn quicker. So, but yes, that was certainly was a challenge.
And what about Australia? How did it go here? Worse than Brazil?
No, much easier. Our style, you know, the way we live, the work that we do is very, very similar. The sport, of course, the rivalry makes it great. You walk into the office and everybody talks rugby and cricket, and, you know, so we just get along or you don't. But, you know, the nice thing in Australia is Aussies are really straight up front with things. You know, you always know where you stand. So, and I appreciate that, you know, they won't beat around the bush. They'll tell you how it is the minute you walk into their office.
Okay, and in relation to the work that you do, has it gone across the board, or have you mainly been working, like you're saying, you start with pulp and paper at first, but then, of course, you moved over in relation to Brazil. So a lot of automation, process automation and so forth that you're involved in, and project engineering as well. Is that mainly within the mining sector, or is that, have you moved around? Because currently you're in the mining sector in relation to Steinart, Australia, that you are in the mining sector as a business development manager. Has it mainly been within mining, or has it been in other areas?
It's been quite a mixed bag. Mining definitely probably about 70% of the work that I've done. Pulp and paper, of course, that was where I started. But industrial automation really you apply to any process, you know, you find out what you try to do and you formulate a strategy and you implement the instruments and the software around that. And a lot of my work in Africa was mining, but also manufacturing. Moving to Brazil, it was a lot of mining, but also plastic films manufacturing. There was pulp and paper as well. Of course, there's different types of pulp and paper that gets manufactured. You get some that's done from virgin wood. You get pulp made from virgin wood mixed with recycled paper. And then there's also the fluting that goes into cardboard boxes, of course, that it gets mixed with sugarcane, bagasse, you know, the fibers from sugarcane. And that gets mixed in with recycled paper to make the fluting. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. But yes, a lot of that in South America was pulp paper, or actually mining, and a little bit of pulp paper. And then moving back to South Africa, we did a fair bit of work in oil and gas. And even in Australia, did oil and gas work. So, you know, automation is across the board. You need to know the specs of the different industries and so on. It gets a bit stringent, more stringent when there's noxious and explosive gases around. And of course, the coal mining, there's a lot of explosive atmospheres. And there's knowing those requirements for the instruments. But apart from that, you know, your automation is pretty much the same across the board.
And how have you seen it also change in relation to, so automation, you know, in the past we would have had a lot of the workforce, the people doing a lot of it, and that's, you know, going back quite a while in some respects. But the level of automation, how has that sort of taken over the industry, where it has, you know, maybe put people into safer areas where they don't have to be in certain areas, and it can be automated and so forth like that?
Certainly, you know, back in the 90s when I started in this industry, we always thought that people are going to be replaced completely. But, you know, you learn very quickly that technology isn't as smart as we make it out to be. Even AI, you need someone behind the scenes to tweak it all the time and keep it doing what you want it to do. And as we learn, and as the instrument is functioning in the process plant, invariably you find out there's a better way of doing things and you keep adjusting it. So the workforce gets upskilled to be able to do that and change the software to control the process better. And the instrument is not really replacing a person as such. It is actually making the job easier and helping people upskill, you know, do a higher level of work. And of course, the main thing there is the safety aspect, where people are removed from the dangerous places. We can put robots in this place, or we can, you know, put barriers to protect people.
So where is it up to now in relation to, I'm interested in your interest in it and keeping you interested in the industry and so forth. What's some of the exciting stuff that's happening in that area at the moment?
Well, the exciting stuff in that right now is mining is looking for better ways, you know, reducing costs, reducing carbon footprints, using less water, reducing the tailings that comes off the process. And all of that, we are now able to do a lot smarter and a lot faster using technology. You know, we've got X-ray technology and X-ray diffraction and all sorts of sensors that can look at the ore as it runs out of the mine and quickly select it to do a dry sorting, so to speak, so that we can reduce the mine's carbon footprint. So they use less energy, they take out the product that they want, and they don't lose any of the good stuff. They put all of that on the product pile, and only the waste gets taken out without the use of water. So these are the things that really gets me excited, where we can really change the dial towards 2050, where we all want to go zero emissions, where we are, you know, working really hard and using technology to bring us to that end.
Yeah, I was just actually reading that in there in relation to the coal, and I was going to get onto that because that is very interesting. Before we do, but let's describe to our listeners Steinert Australia, and they're around the world, 130 years they have been around, magnetic sensor sorting solutions. Give us a little bit of a rundown, and give us a spiel of who Steinert Australia are.
Great. I'll give you a quick rundown. Then we've got five main verticals. We've got metal recycling, waste recycling, then we have mining, and then our magnets and sensor sorting units, which can be used across those industries as well. Metal recycling, that goes anywhere from scrap to shredded metal separation to electronic circuit board recycling, sorting out heavy metals out of ash from incinerators and foundry residues. Then moving to our waste recycling division, which can separate household waste, commercial waste, construction waste, packing waste, you name it. You can separate pretty much anything with these sorting machines, just depending on what sensors you choose on them. And of course, in mining, that's supplied across lithium, rare earths, coal, gold, iron ore, magnetite, you name it, it can sort it. What it basically does, it takes out the product and leaves the waste, you know, separates the product from the waste in a smart way, and it can track the ore body as it changes. And that obviously makes mining a lot more efficient and reduces costs for the customer, and while they're still taking out the product that they're after. And then we move on to the magnets, which is really our protection for crushing units. The suspension magnets, the self-cleaning magnets that sits over the conveyor belts that draw out the tramp metal. Invariably, as you dig up the ore in the mine, in the pit, your bucket teeth snap off, they fall in the ore, and these magnets can then pull it out without letting it damage downstream equipment.
I have got some interest also in the waste recycling area as well. I'm not sure how much you're across that, but at the same time, it's a big thing at the moment. Even just only recently, I think for the first time in a long time, we're sending over our recycling overseas. They're going to give it a trial for a year, I think, our waste overseas and so forth. Tell us a little bit about that, sort of how that's changing, you know, as you said, within the business, household waste, commercial waste, construction and demolition waste and so forth, and packaging and plastics and so forth. But it's a really big thing at the moment. Tell us about some of the technology in that and how that you can see that moving at the going right now.
That is picking up in Australia. Formerly, we didn't have much of this happening here. You know, a lot of our waste was going overseas to get separated. Now China is starting to refuse that, and we have to treat it on site, you know, or in Australia. What the machine pretty much does, you know, any kind of waste is useful, even if it's for composting, you know, food scraps. But you cannot mix that all together, plastic, food scraps, and metal bits, you know, your yogurt cup lids, any of that, and then try and reuse that. You have to separate them one from the other, because the food scraps goes to composting, the aluminum goes towards aluminum recycling and can be used for a host of different things, and so on. So the machines can target the different types of materials and separate them before they actually go off to the different treatment plants. And that's really the big advantage of these machines. We simply don't have enough people, and I don't think there's a lot of people who take a job separating smelly waste to try to find the good stuff in it, where these machines don't care. We have a sensor, they spread it out and they find the good stuff from the bad stuff, or really separate the food scraps from the usable materials. And then you've, end of the day, you've got a high quality, clean composting material, and you've got very clean recyclable metals that you can take away and reuse.
It's interesting too. Well, I mean, I'm interested to know how it's actually moving in Australia, but I'll move into, we'll go on to coal in relation to that. The process in the past, and still is as far as I'm aware, is, you know, coal washing, and it uses large amounts of water. But the process that you, that Steinhardt Australia are doing is a dry coal beneficiation is offered. And you did explain a little bit about that, but How many mines are actually using that sort of technology at the moment, do you know of, and how fast are they maybe moving into it?
We do have an uptake, and there's at least four or five different mines in the East Coast that are using them. And we have a lot of clients inquiring about these machines. So sorting is something that is still taking off. It's an educative process. The machines really make a change for the mine where it can do dry sorting. And, you know, tradition is hard to change. And we have to walk a road with the customer and show them the benefit of it. Now, there's a lot of cost benefit studies that are coming out, and the percentages sometimes is really mind boggling. The amount that the mine can save sometimes is almost unbelievably so. We really have to do the tests and walk with the client through their whole process and, you know, help them make the change. It becomes very much a partnership, a collaboration between Steinhardt and the mine to help make this happen. Yeah, that's it's something that is growing. It's certainly our installed base in waste recycling is much larger than mining, and that is still picking up. And that's the same for, you know, for other companies within our space as well.
I can imagine with the way that the world has been turning, especially over the last, 2 to 3 years, really, a lot of these companies now, their environmental footprint and so forth, they have to make sure that now that they're being looked at a lot closely in relation to, again, that environmental footprint, and they have to get better at it. And a lot of them promise to do so, of course. And also, one of the things I have discussed on this program, one of the issues, of course, is, you might be working with people who have been in the industry for a number of years and they're in a company. Well, this is the way we've always done it, and that's the way we're going to continue to do it. So has it made it easier in relation to a lot of these companies, how they do have to start focusing more on their environmental planning and so forth? Has it made it easier to be able to get in and discuss these sort of this technology with them?
Certainly, people are looking at their options and, they are investigating, and we do a lot of testing, materials testing, to prove that how well the machines work, and customers send us blind samples that we put through the machines and test them and see, there's your separation. They go, oh, great, that really works. And then it's really just motivating the capital expenditure to get the machine in, and it does really change the dial for them. It's, as you say, it's very difficult to break tradition, and often you go to what you know, and you think, why don't I spend a bit more energy tweaking my plant and improving my process? Whereas you install the dry sorters, and they really make a big difference for you. They upgrade your ore in the order of 2-3%, and that is huge for a mine.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I suppose, also Australia, because you've got industrial minerals there as well, with a lot of the work that you do too. Now, this country is now moving forward massively with, they call it new minerals. Of course, it's all old in that respect, but into those sort of industries. So I suspect this is going to be growing quite a lot over the next few years.
Lithium is growing, rare earth is growing. Mm. It's all used in batteries. It's what we need for renewable energy. And there's a lot of interest in that space.
How hard is it to knock on those doors? That's your job, isn't it?
It's my job, yes. People are generally receptive of, having a listen and going through. And we do get a lot of customers moving forward. So it's certainly getting easier when you have the discussion about reducing carbon footprint and making the process better. It's considered to add this to the process, these sorting machines, the front end of the process, because it improves the ore that actually goes through the processing plant. And sometimes if the ore is completely sorted, it doesn't even need to go to the processing plant, which saves a huge amount of money.
So I'm just looking at stuff at the moment, as people could probably notice, is the way I'm talking to you, and I'm finding it extremely interesting, and it's a great way of being able to do it, and I think it's going to grow massively. But Will, we are at the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us, and if people want to get onto Steinert Australia, how can they do that?
We're on the web. Our website is steinertglobal.com/au. Where all our products are listed. And we're based in Melbourne, office in Sydney, and our testing facility over in Perth.
Well, good luck with everything. And like I said, I think it's a growing industry, definitely, and it's an interesting one as well. But thank you very much for joining us today, Will.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry podcast interview series with Kieran Moran from Connecting Industry. If you want to find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to connectingindustry.com.au.